everyone. We are back. I now have Kimberly with me. She's going to be going over Indie Gold, crafting budgets in scopes publishers can't resist. Kimberly, stage is now yours.
Awesome. Thank you, Ash. Hello, everyone. So, apologize for my voice. I'm sick, but I'm trying to get through this. In today's workshop, we will talk about how we can create a success metrics to measure your success targets so that when you go to publishers, you have all the answers to their questions. Move the slide. Does it want to move the slide? Awesome. Wrong screen. So just really quick about me. I'm Kimberly Rodatos, and I've been working in this industry for over 15 years with focus on production, on development, publishing, and live ops. I'm also the founder and president of Digital Owl Inc., which started out as a consultancy company for indie games and AAA games, studios, and publishers. And then in early 2020, Digital Owl decided to venture into indie game development, and we have been working on a small point-and-click adventure game called Brave Snow since then. Around that time, I also became active in multiple indie developer communities where I provide mentorship, help people with their production, or provide pitch deck reviews. And then earlier this year, I also joined Other Side Entertainment as their lead producer on one of their new games. Okay, so what does success actually mean for you? It's really important to think about your success targets and what you're trying to achieve with your games. It's always the first question we ask people when they show us their pitch or when they speak to us. So why are you making this game, or what are your success criteria for your game? A few examples, and it really depends on your studio size, where you are at in your career, but it's important to know to build your story you then can present to publishers. So example success target, I think most of all know, is you can make profit. So you wanna make money with your game, but taking that to the next level, you wanna make enough money to work on your next project. And some people also just opt in to create the first game to build awareness in the community to then grow their studio or get more reputation so that they can easier find a publisher. So once you have your success targets, your success metrics will change. This slide right now won't make sense, but if we go later on through everything, you will understand where this is coming from. But what we're essentially trying to achieve is your game's potential sales, are they aligned with your success targets? Before we get there, we have to create a few building blocks, and we get into a lot of number crunching, but this one is a little bit easier. There are development documents you need to help you build out the success metrics and then also talk to publishers. Why do we need them? We want to learn or really establish what our goals are, and also solve the assumptions we have around our success targets. We want to understand the market and where we actually can go with our games, And then, of course, what will it take to make the games? What's the scope and how much will it cost us? First of all, we have to understand what kind of game are we actually making. So we will talk a little bit about design, art, and tech. And then we will move on to the more tedious work, market research, production plan, and business plan. Now, and throughout all this, I will give you methods and ideas of how we like to do it at Digital Owl or the companies I previously worked at. But there are so many tools out there, and there are so many different approaches that you really should try out a few and see what works best for you. Okay, so the game. A lot of times when people start with their publishing deck or pitching, all they have is a concept overview, key pillars, key features. So they're good to know and they're essential to know, but they are not enough to create a proper scope and budget. Just really briefly, concept overview is just X meets Y equals Z, and Z is your own game. Like for Brave Snow, it's Monkey Island meets Professor Layton is Brave Snow. And then from there, we could build our key pillars and key features. So we wanted to have a lighthearted game. We wanted to have no backtracking, accessible collection progress and stuff like that. But we moved on to pitching. We actually had to think about a lot more than just that. Besides the concept overview, we also needed to be really clear what are our game mechanics, from simple things to, can I walk around in the level? Can the characters walk around in the level? Or is it just point and click and everything is static? What will the user experience? How many levels do we have? Where does the story and narrative go, and how do we present it? And then how do we think about audio and sound? Why is it good to have a grasp on this once you go into pitching? It's because it helps you define your budget and your scope. So the more you have, the more you can break down, the more accurate you can be. But also in general, it's good for you and your team to see what you're working towards. Now, when you just start out, I don't think you will have this. Just take your time and really work on it. It's called concept phase, ideation in production. And once you get to this stage, you're probably halfway through pre-production and your prototype. So this is, I don't know if it's readable, it's not supposed to be readable, but that was one of our first game design documents, actually, with all the ideas, and it absolutely did not work. It's super hard to see where the main characters are, what they're going to do, how the story evolves and everything. So after this first iteration, we went into Miro, which worked a bit better. But once we got to that point where we could pitch it, we actually set it up in Trello, which was a really nice overview, helped us also track on how long did we take in the prototype phase for levels, how long did it take us to do the first render pass, second render pass, etc. Now, as I said, there are so many great tools out there that help you achieve these things. Trello, Miro, just a few examples. There's also Confluence and Jira. Just experiment with what works for you. And then next, about your game, you need an art bible. It got less, but in the beginning, there were a lot of pictures we saw during the reviews that had concept art in them. And they just showed us mood boards and stuff. Again, it's a really good starting point to have this and to think about your art style early on. But once you start pitching, you should have a good understanding about your visual style guide. How do your characters look like? Do you want to animate the faces? What's your environment design? Is it 3D, 2D? A little bit about your asset guidelines and pipelines, because that determines what the quality is of the game and how much does it take you to make it. And then, of course, VFX and animations. Next, technical design, very similar to art. In the beginning, you probably just think about, oh, will I use Unreal Engine, or does Unity work better for my team, or am I going to make my own engine? You probably want to think a little bit about the modes your game provides. If you have a platformer, is there a just easy mode, casual mode, where people can skip certain intersections of a level, or do you have a hardcore mode where people have to run against the time to get certain achievements? And then, of course, also, which platforms do you want to publish on? PC only, or do you also want to go to console? I need to sneeze, so sorry. Mobile, yes. So again, this is a starting point, and then once you go into pitching, you should have a good understanding of your architecture. What game systems do you have? Will there be multiplayer? Will there be co-op? How does the platform integration work? And what is your optimization strategy? So, we'll get back to this in a bit to see why this is so important. But it is good to know these things, even if they won't give you just 100% accurate budget and scope yet. They will, like everything else, give you a starting point. So next, we move on to market research. So market research, besides knowing what your game is this most second important thing I recommend, or document I recommend people making. It's also one of the hardest to do, because we're developers, we don't want to think about marketing, we don't want to think about target audience, but it will help you in a lot of ways. So once you have the game idea, these are the assumptions you want to either confirm or see if you need to be pivot. So is my game idea, design idea good? Have there been other successful games on the market like this? Am I right with why one players want to play my game? So go into similar games, go into the Steam reviews, read through what they like, what they didn't like, see on Reddit or wherever the audience is for your game, and check what players, why did they like this game, why did they play it, or why didn't they like it. This will also help you identify your target audience. So if you think you're going on PC and you're making a horror game, it's of course most likely 16 or 18 plus. So is the audience big enough to support the game I'm making? You want to confirm that the things you think are unique about your game are really unique, or if they already exist, that you can bring or elevate them to another level, they become unique. We already talked a bit about player expectations, and then your target platform. So you want to make an RTS game, but you want to go on console. Does it really make sense? Or should I stick to PC and Switch? So that's a lot said, but how do you actually confirm these assumptions? And that is by a lot of tedious work. So again, I don't think it's really readable, but not necessary to read it. What we did for Brave Snow, or what I do often for other games, is I just take a whole bunch of games, narrow down a little bit by the platform that is the main focus of the game. And then I figure out specific criteria that I set for my game and start filtering them out. So you can start by filtering out by platform. Is it on PC? Is it on PlayStation or mobile? And then I made a few highlights for positive and negative reviews. Also added the Metacritic, because one of the success targets we set ourselves, and here the success targets come back in to help you do your market research, is we want to at least have a 75 plus Metacritic. So all the games that did not make it, we did not make them high priority to research or a direct competitor. And then we still played them, we still looked at them, but it helped us narrow it down. And then the same was pricing, gameplay time. So these are all easy things to filter. Once we had this list, I think we started with 2,000 titles. We narrowed it down to 300 or so. And then with another pass, narrowed it down to 15. And with these 15, we could really go into detail and check out, okay, these are the things we want to do the same because we think they're really good. These are the things we want to avoid. And these are the things we want to bring to the next level, and then compare them. I'm happy to share out our market research afterwards, so you guys can have a look at that. So the most important outcome of this document, though, is even if you do not want to go through the whole research and look at hundreds of games, is what is the game and what is the game not. So for example, for Brave Snow, oftentimes in these point-and-click adventure games, you have sarcastic humor, force wall breaks, and so on. But we clearly stated that we do not want this because we want a wholesome game that can be played by all and understood by all ages. We also said we don't want RPG-like mechanics. This is a funny one, but we don't want annoying main characters. Weirdly enough, one of the main reviews for point-and-click games that were negative always said the main character is annoying. So we want to avoid that. And then also, if we go into game mechanics, we want to avoid overuse of hidden objects. But what we want to be is lighthearted, uplifting, kids-friendly. All our puzzles need to be designed in a way that they're self-contained. So there's no backtracking. We want a self-cleaning inventory, which we actually took from one of our competitors, and because it was a really successful feature they added. But we also could identify what makes us unique. And what made us unique is that we had a hub, which is unusual in these games. So the hub evolves over time. And a trend that is more and more coming up in adventure games is that we want to have a fleshed out codex that represents your collectibles and things. So once you have the list, it's also easy for you to prioritize what you build first and what's most important for your game. So you can establish that scope and see, okay, if the scope goes over budget, these are the things we could potentially cut. So the results, these are really big fancy words. I would recommend Googling them, but they're all very important. The market research, besides, of course, the game features, should also give you the customer value proposition. So what that means is, why would a player want to play your game and what do they get out of it? Your positioning and targeting. So what are the benefits? Why should players play your game? What are the favorable points of difference? Why should I buy your game and not a competitor's game? And then the resonating focus, which is, what is the most worthwhile thing for me to keep in mind about your game? And then, from there, you also have your competitor list. You know what these competitor lists sold approximately. I didn't go into detail about that, but during this exercise, you should see how successful they were, but limited to a specific time frame, because you will look at competitors that have released over the last 3-4 years. And the current data you're getting is for the whole 3 years. But as they all released in different timelines, try to find out how much each of them actually sold in the first months or 6 months or whatever time frame you set yourself. Otherwise, it can be very misleading. Okay, and then, of course, the target price points, which we need for comparison later on. Okay, and next is the production plan. Now we finally can put everything together and you can see how long it takes and costs. Now, I make it sound easy. I know it's not easy, and it's a process that will take several months, and you will iterate on it as you go through prototyping, trying out different things, learning new things. And I will show you a way of how I like to do it in early stages to get the initial scope and budget for pitching. But there are lots of different methods, and there are a lot of great people who have talks or advice or books on how to do this, and you have to figure out what works for you. So you don't have to go too much into detail at this stage. Again, you're probably just starting pre-production, have your prototype ready, so you can't know everything 100%, but you should have the main game systems. You should know roughly how many levels you want to have and how much time you want to spend on each level, the characters and things. Again, these are all just estimates, and with everything game development, this will probably change over time. But again, it's a starting point. You need a budget to show to publishers, so it's better to have it thought out like this and change it later on, or maybe the publisher will help you to go through it and refine it, than just putting random numbers there. You will be surprised by how many people we talk to, and then we ask them, how did you come up with the budget? And they just say, oh, we didn't know what else to put there. So for the product plan itself, just break it down in big milestones, and then new teams you need to work on it. So if you're, for example, making a 3D game, you have a 3D artist. If it's only 2D, you probably have 2D artists, but multiple than just one. Required resources is, of course, your team, your money, any licenses, certain PC specs, if you need development kits and things like that, because it all goes into your timeline. It takes time to get these things, but also into the costs. Yeah. Risk mitigation, I put it here. It's something to think about. For example, if you have only one engineer in your team, and then say you're planning for contingency and how you're planning for it, just have that answer ready for the publisher. but that will evolve over time as well. And then also with every plan, just to keep yourself sane at some buffer. So the buffers I like to have is 10% or 10 to 20%, depending on the team size, to accommodate for anyone being out sick or emergencies or something else that could happen. You never know. Or there might be a feature that takes much longer than you thought, but you couldn't until you actually see it all together, or you couldn't know until you see it all together. So at the 20% buffer. And then add another buffer of 10 to 15%. And that buffer is for community and marketing efforts. There were some great talks yesterday and today that show that we as indie game developers have to do a lot of our own community marketing work, even if we go with a publisher. So make sure you have that time set aside and in your plan to create assets, videos, or even just post on Twitter, Discord to engage with your community, and later on play tests and whatever you have planned with them. And one last thing is post-launch support. Just because the game is released doesn't mean you make immediately all the money at once. So plus, there will probably be a lot of bugs that only come with the quantity of new players that get into your game. So you have to support it, fix them. So also make sure you have that in that production plan. And add it to the costs. So here is an example. So what I did is, when did I did this? This was at the stage we just went out of pre-production into production. I broke it down a little bit into milestones, and I had a whole chunk, maybe I can show it later in the backlog, broken down the high level game systems, main assets, hero assets, sounds assets, and so on. And then I could calculate, I just give them all an arbitrary number, like for each character we want to spend a week, for each hero character we want to spend at least 2 weeks. For each level we know that we will spend 3 to 4 weeks or something like that. I don't know, out of my head, that was a while ago. But what it allowed me to do is just get rough numbers and calculation to know, okay, I need my 2D artist for 12 months. I need two 3D artists for 13 and 6 months. And then when each of them can start their work, and then I can add up each of the months by how much I would pay them, and then add up the roles. As you can see, the publishing work I mainly put at the end. Of course, it happens throughout, but having it in blocks and putting it together helped me just to quantify it. Now, if you do it in month 4 or month 16, it doesn't really matter at that point later on. Okay, moving on. Last document, and then we get to the number crunching. And I don't even know what time it is. Studio business plan. So also something that is really important to have if you go to a publisher, because when you go to a publisher with your game idea, with your scope, with your budget, they want to know who they work with. So you have to build not only a story for your game, but also a story for your studio. Why are you making games? Where are you coming from? What is the future? So you kind of build this framework for yourself that also gives you a little bit of restrictions on how to decide which game to make, what the scope is. Do you want to grow to 5 people or 10 people in a few years? Or do you always want to stay small? Do you want to mainly foster talent in-house? Or is that too risky for you and you prefer to have just the key people in-house and then outsource the rest? What kind of studio are you making? What kind of culture are you building? Does that culture align with the publisher you're reaching out to? And are your values the same? And then what kind of experience do you want to build? A lot of indie game developers, I see them hop around a lot between different games. So unfortunately, they can't take the learnings, or not all the learnings from the previous game, to the next game, because they are so widely different. If you make a platformer or an RTS, there's a huge difference. So just think about that, how you want to grow your expertise and because you had success with a game you previously released, which maybe was a platformer, does not mean that you can have success, the same success with another genre. But if you say you make another platformer and the publisher sees, oh yeah, they're really good at this and they learned throughout their development, it's more likely that they believe in the team and the scope you laid out in front of them. So yeah, just think about this, ask yourself the questions, and then build the story, which also should be part of the pitch deck when you present your team. So in your business plan itself, again, this is iterated over time, and you don't need everything like 50 pages or whatever. The most important is that you have answer to the questions. You will need your elevator pitch, so not only for your game, but also for you as a team. Why should we work with you and not another team that's making it in the similar genre? Where do you want to go? We talked about that already a little bit. And it's also in line with your success target. What's your company description? And of course, for yourself, you want to know, how do your finances look like? What's your runway? Runway is important. So if you set yourself as a success target, I want to make enough money to finance the next game, an advice is always to have at least 6 months of runway in the bank account to support the team to build up to the next pitching cycle or success, even if you release it, so that you're not suddenly stuck with a few months in between projects. Okay, this is just one example. That was one of the first iterations we had on this, so people could know who we are. We wanted to build our brand. I mean, we're a new studio, we still have not released the game, but we wanted to introduce ourselves, make sure that we can successfully release the game from start to finish. And for us, in the beginning, it was more building trust with the community and publishers than making profit. Next, of course, we want to sustain our operational costs. So that's the part of profit I mentioned, the 6 months I wanted to cover. And then build a team and have the experience ideally in-house. So when we build this sequel of our platformer, of our point-and-click adventure game or the next game, I already know that I can rely on the people and we know how they work. As many things, a lot of things happen in real life, so Brave Snow is not there yet, but hopefully soon. Okay, so these are all the documents. Well, I call them documents, but these are all the things to be aware of, to think about, and really invest some time in to get it right. Because once we're there, we can actually start with our unit sales metrics. So what does it mean? What we're going to do is we're going to see how much units we potentially could sell with certain games of a certain scope and if that fits into the current market. And then the sales metrics or the unit sales metrics will show you if it aligns with the metrics and gives you an inkling of the risk to go further with this or not. Doesn't make sense now, probably, but once we go through it, it will make more sense. So now we know what our success targets are and our goals. We know what the market is, who our competitors are, how much units they sold, what their price tags are, and we know what the scope and cost of our game is. We will run through one example first, and then I actually have a sheet. Some of you who are active on the ITV Discord might know already, where we will input some example things. Okay, so for this hypothetical game, let's say we have a dev cost of 50,000. I didn't put a currency on it because it really doesn't matter. That's actually where the title IndieGold is coming from. Our available funds, so what we have currently in the bank account, is 50,000, which is awesome. We can potentially do this without a publisher. But we want to make another 10,000 because that gives us a runway of 3 to 6 months for after we launch the game. So unit price points, similar games in the market, the lowest ones are $9.99, the highest ones sell for $19.99, and then I also like to have the midpoint, just because you never really will sell. No, that's not true. But you potentially sell most of your games during sales, so you have a nice variation of if you go 30% off or 50% off over time. That's a new whole talk about how to calculate revenue over a year. We will not get into that. And then estimated unit sales. So other games that released in the market in recent years. In the first 6 months, they have sold 17,000 units. The more successful ones, to 5,000 units for the lower successful ones. Now, what we often see is people just, oh yeah, okay, so 60,000 is how much money I want. Let's just divide it by the unit prices and see if it works with our unit estimates. So we have our unit prices. We divide 60,000 by that, and then we would potentially sell around 6,000. Oh, we potentially need to sell around 6,000 units. Sorry, my throat. Or on the higher end, if we go with the highest price point, around 3,000, which looks really good because it is in line with the estimated sales we've seen earlier during our market research. So we're not even need to reach that high. But unfortunately, this calculation is very misleading. So before we get to the actual unit estimates, we have to do a few adjustments. The first adjustment is our unit prices. So what I think did for this example is say I took off 30% of the price. It doesn't need to be 30%. It's just something I wanted to go a bit more conservative with this one, but it can be like 15, 20. Just see where your main target is, sales target. So if it's in the US, UK, you can probably go a bit lower, but if you're selling more games in other areas, you probably want to go a bit higher. Why? Because you have to account for chargebacks, refunds, and currency exchange. So you rarely actually sell the game for the full price. Or actually never sell it for the full price because there are also taxes and stuff. But I didn't include them here because I don't want to make it even more complicated than it already is. But from our previous unit sales estimates, by just a normal calculation, we are already increasing it now to from 6,000 to 8,500, or if we go with the price from point from 1999, 3,000 to 4,300. I hope you can still follow me. This is all a lot to take in and a lot of numbers, but once we get to the sheet, it will be easier to understand. So, still looking good with the estimated unit sales we have from our competitors, but we're not there yet. Next adjustment is platform fees. Most of the platform fees besides Epic Game Store, you have to pay 30%. So it doesn't matter if on console or Steam. So we're adding 30%. It's already getting there. The lower one, the highest price point needs 5,600 units, which is already a bit higher than the estimated unit sales. And the lowest one, 11,200. But we're still not done. We also have to add licenses and other fees. Most of these will be engine fees. In our case, because we make below 1 million revenue, nothing changes. But I'm actually not sure how it works for Unity, but just make sure you see how much you have to pay the engine you're using. And then I think this is the last one, finally, marketing costs. So no matter if you go with a publisher or if you go with yourself, just make sure you add marketing costs from 15% to 25%, because you will have to pay for trailers. Even if you want to use the acquisition on Facebook or other platforms, that needs to be added. And then it's 15% to 25%. I actually have to add that to the slide before I send it out, of your overall development costs. So adding that, it's already getting up there. I opted only for 20% here this time. We're still looking good for our estimated unit sales. So our metrics should not look too bad in a second. But to show you all these conversions and everything in another way, first we want to make 60,000 gold. But what we actually need to make to reach our targets is 91,000 gold. So just as an example. Okay, so with this exercise, I like to color this from very green to very red to see or give me a quick glance of the risks. But in this case, with development costs of 50,000, we want to make another extra 10,000. We're good to go for the next project. And this seems to be rather viable. So what if we change the scope a little bit because we want to add co-op to the game, which we saw was a really neat feature too for the genre we're making. And from our estimates, it's around 25,000. Now, you can see that the risk already gets a lot higher. So it's not undoable, but it is definitely more risky. But if you have co-op, a really cool feature, you probably can sell it for the higher rather than the lowest price point. But that also means that you ideally sell a lot in the first few months before you go anywhere on sale. So instead of just changing the scope, because this is a really cool new feature, why don't we try this with a publisher? So now when we go with a publisher, we also add the publisher targets to these calculations, and suddenly everything looks super risky. But what we shouldn't forget is every time you go with a publisher, and that is one of the major benefits of going with someone who has experience with launching game, we increase our reach. So while alone we only could reach around 17,000 people or the good games, now with a publisher, because we have the backing and support of their marketing, their community, we might reach 25,000 plus. And the risk already gets much reduced, and suddenly it's a viable option. So if we compare them all here, this gives you a really nice view of min scope. So this is just with the 50,000 plus 10,000 in the beginning, your ideal scope, because you really want to have co-op on it. It's a bit more risky, still doable, but if you want to do the ideal scope, it's easier to go with a publisher. That being said, even if everything is not as green or more reddish, this is not the gospel. It's there to help you see, does it actually make sense? Do I maybe steer a little bit in another direction? Or, am I crazy and I will still go for it, even though all odds point against it? Just see what works best for you, experiment around with it. Don't make guesstimates again, do your research. No, that's wrong. You will make guesstimates, but don't just put anything there. Make sure that you do your research. For example, if you reduce development costs or up development costs, you know exactly which features you remove and which features you add. This is also not an actual forecast. It's a guideline. There are a lot of other factors and things that play into this. For example, this doesn't include localization, porting, QA, and things like that. But this is where a publisher or people in the community can help figuring this out. Also, this exercise is mainly for premium games on console and PC. This I would not use for live ops game or free-to-play that rely on in-app purchases and others. If you have questions about that, I'm happy to show you alternatives for this, but not right now. It would go and blow up the scope of this talk. Okay. I'm sure you will all have a lot of questions. I like this normally to be more interactive, but what is next? So what you have to do next is, if you see this, you're not happy with it, or you're happy with it, make sure that you iterate on it over time. Everything, something happens in your development with your team, adjust it, repeat it, or add to this whole exercise. It's never just a one-time thing and then it's done. So the same with your pitch decks, the same with your game design document. This is a guide that will evolve with your project. And then, of course, you can use these numbers, or you can be confident when you go talk to a publisher. In the pitch itself, you should only say, okay, this is what I want. But if they have questions and ask, like, oh, what if we do this? And then you can answer, yeah, if we do this, we will be more at risk, but we increase our target audience. Or if we do this, it would cost that much more. And then things like that. So tell them what your favorite option is. And then when they talk to you, you have answers to see if there's more potential or if there's still potential with less. Next big part is ask for help. So there are so many great indie game communities out there, so many great talks. I mean, the IGB event is one of them. Just see how others did it. Don't be scared to reach out to people that make games with a similar genre. I have not met an indie game developer yet that is not willing to share the numbers or their experience. Same for publishers. Even before you're ready for pitching, when you build this and you want to know if the publisher is fit, or if they have experience, you might not get an answer from all, but the little answer or the answers you will get are normally very insightful. And again, they're super happy to help and help you grow, because again, they want to foster a community where they have a lot of great games and successes. So reach out to them early, start networking early, and then when you're ready to pitch, they already know you, you build a rapport with them, they know your story. And last but not least, for asking for help, is find a mentor. The indie community is, I'm not saying it's mature, but it's growing in maturity. There are a lot of people with success stories or failures that are super happy to share what they learned, to be a sounding board. And because indie game development is such a rough road, you often do it on your own or just with another person, but that person probably just has as much experience as you. So it's always good to have someone to talk to who can steer you back on the right track, or when you're down, to pick you back up. Okay, the most important though that I tell everybody is when they go through this exercise, there's nothing wrong with admitting an idea does not work. It happens to everybody. If you see how many games have released last year on Steam, I think around 14,000. If you think about it, you probably only heard about 0.05% of that 14,000. So we are a survivor-based community or market. So you only hear about the success stories, but you rarely hear about the failures. So don't give up. Just go back to the drawing board, try it again, go through it. And maybe you just also say, I don't care what the numbers say. I just want to make exactly this game and I can pull it off. That's fine too. But with Brave Snow, for example, it actually started out as a 3D platformer, not a point-and-click adventure game. But over time, we quickly noticed that the team and the money we had available, it was just not doable for us to create a platformer. So we pivoted to point-and-click. And it made the whole process a lot more enjoyable, because we knew that this is something we want to work on, and this is something we actually can achieve, and we don't put too much pressure onto us. Okay, so as I said, let's go through the sheet. I hope they will share out later as well, to give some or one example, or at least know how the sheet works. I don't know. Let me check how much time we have left. 15 minutes. Perfect. Need to share again. Share screen, window. Oh, you want to see me double for a second. There we go. Okay. I hope it shares. Let me check. Yeah, probably. Well, if not, then I'll just do this by myself. This is always weird doing it online and not in person. So all the things we talked about, I created a document where you can input your research in the yellow bars, and ideally it will just output this for you. There are a few steps we have to take to do it, but let's just get through it. So project costs total, what do we say? I give an example. So when Brave Snow was still platformer, our project cost total, I think, were 350,000. And then marketing costs, right now I have 0.1, but for everyone, 0.2. I should automate that. Put the percentage here so it automatically calculates it for you guys. So spend so far, when we started pitching, I think we spent around 20,000 on the game. Our own funds we still had in the bank account were like 100,000. And that was it. And this way we know, okay, if the overall cost and the marketing cost is 420 together, I have 120,000. It doesn't calculate it properly. See, now I go through this and then I see mistakes, but that's easily fixed. Here we go. So we need to ask for 300,000 from the publisher. We also wanted to make sure that with the scheme we have, I think, 3 months of leeway, and back then our cost monthly was somewhere around, I want to say 10k, but it's really not important. So our goal is to have at least 60,000 so the guys can survive and eat. And then investor goals, let's say with this one, because it's a little bit on the higher end, they actually want to make 2x out of what they did. What we have to make with the game overall with just these number is $1,080,000. So engine royalties will fall into this, and other things. So I'm just gonna copy paste all of this in here because I only have the calculations for engine royalty in the last row. I swear I will clean this up for you guys once before I send it out, and then it will make it much easier. I just, as you can see, I use it quite often for when I help people. So I mess it up a lot of times as well. My own funds. Okay, cool. And then 60,000, you said. Okay, clean up. No, there's something missing. Oh yeah, times two. Times two. Sorry for this audio. Okay, but this should all fix. All right, perfect. So price adjustment, our main target markets are probably US, UK, so we will just go for 20%. And then prices, the lowest the platformer should sell for is $49.99, $19.99, and $24.99. Oh, no, I did it. This one, because this one does already the calculations for you. $19.99 and $24.99, I said. Okay, I have the royalties input here. We know we will use Unreal Engine, and then doesn't actually matter if you go Steam or anything else. We'll just stick with that. Okay, and then last thing we have to do from our research is how much did they sell roughly? So let's say minimum units were 35, 23. Average units probably around 50. I'm almost half making them up. But okay, so the only thing is, and I figured out how to fix it, you still have to do this manually, which is a bit annoying, but once I get this automated, it should be easier. Data, conditional formatting, and then we can add the numbers here. 35. You see the colors changing already. They're still looking very red. And 25. Done. Okay. Now you can see why I did not go with the platform. No, that wasn't it. It was a bit greener. I think I had 100,000 something. But yeah, so this was probably more complicated than helpful. But please just ask me questions, reach out to me, or I'll walk you through it again. But it shows me that if I would go on Epic Games Store, for example, it's a little bit less risky because they only have a 12% royalty than when I would go on Steam. But overall, this is still a very risky endeavor if this is what the market tells me currently. Now, it doesn't mean that it's wrong. Maybe I can do it without a publisher and do it myself, but I would not know how to get the funds. So I probably just have to pivot the game, either make it smaller or pick a different genre. Okay, I think this is it. Thank you for listening to this. Oh, stop sharing. And I do not know if...
Nope, you're good. You're good. I'm here. Okay. Thank you so time. Much. You are on time. You did great, Kimberly. Yes. Thank you. For everybody who's watching, Kimberly is with us most Thursdays doing pitch deck reviews. So you guys are always welcome to join our Discord, which I'm trying to drop a link in chat. There it goes. Join it and you'll be with Kimberly and Omar, and it's just a free resource for you guys. Let's try to go through these. We have a few questions, but we are okay on time, but I don't know if we'll get through all of them. So let's start them. So from Caroline on YouTube, in your market research, how did you choose which games were your competitors?
Yes, that's a really good question. I don't have the document here, but I will share it later in the IGB. I started with the genre, just the overall genre text to filter it. So if you have a point and click game, I choose point and click, wholesome, and some others. So it reduced that. Then I also looked at games that are more like Monkey Island. So there are really great point and click games, just as where When the World Was Around and others, but we did not see that as a competitor because it was much smaller and the puzzles were also different than we wanted them. And yeah, we just went through them, played them, saw, does it feel with what we think is right for this? And then went like this. As I said, we had 1,000 to start with and then we broke it down. But you will see that in the document I shared.
Right, let's go to the next one. Teddy on YouTube, you mentioned a 10 to 20% community and marketing budget buffer. Would you say that you provide in a budget proposal for a game the marketing budget plus the buffer, or use the buffer as the budget?
So normally when you pitch to publishers, do your research, see what the publisher asks for on their website. They have descriptions on these are the things we want to see in your pitch deck, but most of them are not asking for marketing budget if you are on platform console or Steam. It's a bit different with mobile. Why I would still leave in marketing budget in your overall development costs and just add that to 2D or 3D art is because you have to help create the assets and make some time. And even though the publisher will help you with marketing, you still have to do your own community building. So yeah, add it to your development costs if you go pitching, not necessarily as marketing budget, but just call it publishing efforts or something like that. I hope that made sense.
All right. So we have from Press A to Begin on YouTube, where can we find unit sales data of competitors?
Yeah, that's a tough one. So you have websites like SteamDB, VGC Charts. I think I actually do have a list. I will share it out afterwards as well. The most important though is, because none of them are 100% accurate, is that you use one source. So if you go with SteamDB for one title, just do it with all. If you're looking for competitors on Nintendo or PlayStation or Xbox, the answer I have for you, there's no real information out there, but press releases or reaching out to the developers or publishers themselves, which makes it a bit harder. But most of the time, we start with PC anyway, PC platform. And during a pitch, what the publisher wants to see is how long does it take you from start to finish or getting the game release ready on PC, and then console importing and all those things that come later.
All right, last one. From Prime Material Cast on Twitch, what sort of tools do you use to figure out how many units similar games sell?
Yeah, very, very similar answer. Actually, I just remembered another one. There are some really great calculators out there that do reverse calculation from wish lists to potential unit sales. So they are a really great tool as well. I will add it to the list and I can share that out. But that's it. There's no real accurate data. It's all more estimates. The most accurate data you can get is go to people and ask them directly. But because of contracts or other obligation they have with publishers, they might not always be able to share them.
Great job. Thank you so very much for your time today, Kimberly. You did great. I was hoping that your cat was going to like come around and be bossy, but.
She's sleeping on my office chair.
She's still snoozing. All right, guys. Next up, we have Magdalena, and her talk is going to be about minimal viable process, how to find flow in your ways of working. So make sure you stay tuned and check out our next one. And thank you again so much, Kimberly. We'll catch you guys here in just a few minutes.
Bye.